Project Independence is the Aging in Place initiative of the Town of North Hempstead. One of the many services we offer is transportation for food, shopping, and medical visits. Call 311 or 869-6311 to get more information or receive services.
And welcome back to Project Independence in You right here at WCWP.org, 88.1 FM. We have been speaking with Dr. Quanta Ahmed and all about the importance of sleep and sleep disorders and so much more. I want to thank you so much for coming here today. I know that you actually had to cancel patients, so we're really grateful to have you. This is great information, and I don't want to stop anymore because I know you have so much more to talk about.
Well, just to clarify, we had enough notice for your for this visit so that patients just were not scheduled today.
Oh, okay.
I would not move a patient for something like this.
We appreciate that as well.
But I also appreciate the work that you're both doing here with Project Independence to raise awareness of sleep disorders, because one of the fears that people bring is that, do I really have to go to a sleep center in order to look after my sleep? And that is a valid question. I think the answer is not necessarily. If you have a good internist, a good gerontologist, a good physician who is familiar with, they will be able to guide you towards some principles of healthy sleep. And there have been many devices on the market that purport to measure one's sleep. You'll see people wearing Apple Watches and Fitbits and other wearable technology, and patients bring them into the office and talk about their sleep based on them. I would say that those devices cannot give you an individual diagnosis. There is no device that could really give you a diagnosis that is available to the consumer over the market and not used with a physician. But over time, they could provide you useful patterns of what my Fitbit is showing me over a month or 2 months or 3 months. Maybe you decided to eliminate late night alcohol, late night caffeine, and over the course of months you'll see more time registered as sleep in the Fitbit or in any other wearable technology. And I do not promote any specific technology. I have no financial relationships with any of the makers.
Okay.
So I would say there's no harm in looking into, there's a lot of knowledge. A good book for everyone to have on their bookshelf, whether you're a physician or a patient, is The Promise of Sleep, which was written actually in the early 90s by Professor William Dement of Stanford, who is really the godfather of modern sleep medicine. And it is a vital resource for every clinician and every patient.
Would you say that again,
The
please?
Promise of Sleep.
By?
The Promise of Sleep by William Dement. The Promise of Sleep by William Dement. Okay. And that is a book which will tell you about sleep through the lifespan, including in the elderly patient. But going on with, we were just speaking about movement disorders. A very common movement disorder or a very common condition that is present in the elderly is Parkinson's disease or Parkinsonism. And that often manifests with sleep disorders. Patients have loud sleep talking. It's one of the first observations. Sometimes their sleep talking is out of character with their personality. They might be very placid, lady or gentleman in the day, and they might have very vociferous and even colorful language in the middle of the night. Sometimes
that's not
they have
dementia.
No, that's not necessarily dementia. Dementia is not diagnosed based on movements. Dementia is a complex diagnosis, as people here are more expert in it than I. But that's not dementia. That is considered a parasomnia. All sleep talking is a parasomnia. Then sometimes they do have movements where they may get up and do sleepwalking, and they have something very characteristic where they get up and they do something complicated, and when they're woken up by their partner, this is what I was dreaming I was doing. So we have patients who are dreaming that they're diving into a pool, and we find that they're diving off the bed. We have patients that are fighting off an assailant, and they find out that they're combative towards their partner. So there are many phenomena with movements that are going to be more complicated. And sometimes patients are shy to say. They feel embarrassed. The husband feels embarrassed that he bumped into the wife at nighttime. Sometimes there can even be an injury to one or the other. They don't want to be misconstrued as some sort of abusive situation at home, which is not. It's a medical condition that is diagnosable and treatable and can sometimes predate Parkinson's by 15 years. So it's very important. If there are unusual things happening, unusual behaviors happening in sleep, I'd like you to see a doctor and certainly a sleep disorder specialist. And just because you see a sleep disorder specialist at the center does not mean that we're going to put you into the sleep center. Some people are afraid to come to sleep doctors because they're afraid of the sleep study. Mm-hmm. So bear in mind, we do sleep studies on children as little as 2 and even younger in the field. At NYU Winthrop, we study very young children up to the very advanced disability and elderly. We can make everyone feel comfortable. We have a wonderful team, but that's not always necessary. Sometimes I have patients that are too debilitated to come. Sometimes my patients are paraplegic or quadriplegic, and it's not feasible for us to do some of these investigations, but we can still help you.
Dr. Ahmed, it would be remiss, I'm sorry, not to ask you, even though this is more of kind of maybe a younger phenomenon now, but it's still, I think, people in their 60s and a little and older are still experiencing this. The impact of technology on sleep.
Oh.
People in their cell phones. People.
So glad you mentioned
they
that.
They can't put it down.
Yes.
If I sleep with my Fitbit, I've got my Fitbit on.
I've got
my cell phone here. Yeah. And certainly when this book came out, The Promise of Sleep, I don't think technology was part of that concept.
So that's such a great point that you're
raising. And television
raising.
As well.
Both
late
of
night
you,
television.
Phenomenal. This is one of my mantras. If any of my patients are listening out there, they've heard this before. Technology is particularly destructive to sleep. And in fact, if you go into the homes we're in a very beautiful area here in Long Island. Many people are well-to-do, and many people are living an ordinary middle-class or lower-middle-class life as well. In America, we have these devices. We have televisions in every room. We have televisions in the bedroom. Patients are using their iPad. They're doing their Facebook games. They're watching WhatsApp videos. This is what happens in bed before sleep, and it affects the elderly as much as it affects a younger patient. I mean, I have patients that are in their 90s that are extremely digitally savvy and are using this.
Sure.
And the destruction comes from, number one, we're only really able to sleep when we can abandon vigilance to our environment. That's how we sleep. That's how animals sleep. A lion has to climb up into a tree in order to go to sleep. He is the king of the jungle, but he can't afford to be sleeping where something bigger
it's
than
dangerous.
Him could come and
sure,
trample
like,
on him. So he gives up vigilance in the tree and he goes to sleep. We are now in this hyper-accelerated news cycle, this technological immersion everywhere. There's almost no room that you can go to where you cannot see a screen. The screen, what it does is, number one, it's distracting. Number two, it's a source of artificial light after the sun has gone down. Mm-hmm. When the sun has gone down, it's trying to tell our brain, darkness is coming, time for sleep, and it releases a hormone in the brain called melatonin, which we naturally produce. The best way to turn off melatonin is to sit in front of a bright light. And that's why we have a 24/7 society. In the 20th century, with the arrival of 24/7 lighting and electricity, we lost about 90 minutes of total sleep time in the American population. Used to be farmers would go to sleep when the sun would go down. They'd come up at dawn. They're up with the crows, and they go down with, you know, what animals come out in dawn. This is what we're supposed to be doing. But instead, we ignore these biological signals. We become sleep deprived. Never mind the social impact of being attached to technology, but the biological impact is it delays sleep onset. And the phenomena in sleep medicine is called social jet lag. So if you sit there on your iPad or your television or your iPhone, the way all of us were yesterday in this very unusual day that we've had yesterday, all of us were completely transfixed until late into the night. Then my melatonin cannot come out and my sleep onset is delayed. I will have insomnia, but the sun rises the next day. I've got to work the next day or do whatever my activities are the next day. I become sleep deprived. And I think that is definitely making sleep disorders not just more common, but more common in many age groups. The people listening will notice their children and grandchildren cannot function without these devices.
Right.
In the other end of the spectrum, we see children and babies that cannot fall asleep without devices because they're programmed to seeing a DVD or seeing a YouTube or something before they go to sleep.
Are they going to miss something? Is there a video on? Is someone posting something?
Yes.
What can one do? If say, you know, they've been up, they've been in front of the television, they can't fall asleep because their melatonin has shut off. How do you get that back naturally? Is there a way? Do you turn off the lights and just lay in bed?
So, I mean, for that night, that's a good question. There may not be much you can do. I always say the bedroom is for sleep and sex only. So if that's not happening in there, leave the bedroom. And then you go and do something cripplingly boring. For me, it would be reading the sports pages, For somebody else, it might be reading a fashion magazine, folding socks, cutting out coupons, anything, sorting out the laundry in dim lighting. In my house, as the sun goes down, I put the lights down. I have only one television. Though recently I was thinking, why don't I live like the American that I am and have more televisions? But I only have one television. It's not in the area that I sleep. My telephone, even as a doctor, I have a landline that is in a different room. My cell phone is not allowed in my bedroom. So the bedroom becomes an environment where you walk past it in the middle of the day and you feel sleepy.
You are unique.
And then after a night of insomnia, let's say you've had a night of insomnia. I'm not unique because many of our patients learn these techniques.
That's different.
Yeah. So in the morning, if you've had a terrible night's sleep, get outside, get into the daylight, even on an overcast day like this. No sunglasses. Get entrained. Get entrained to the local daylight, which will help you stay awake. Avoid naps that day. And the next night, the same thing. Do not go to the bedroom until you're overwhelmed with a feeling of sleepiness. Go to the bedroom. If again you pop up, oh, I can't sleep, and you estimate it's been 15 minutes, leave and do something boring. That's called stimulus control and sleep restriction. And in fact, we have a brilliant colleague here on Long Island that we work with that should be a guest on your show in the future.
Got that, Christine?
Dr. Gila Hertz, who's a brilliant behavioral sleep specialist. 4 or 5 meetings with her and a little education with us, and you can transform your sleep routine. But a lot of it is looking at the bedroom as a sanctuary. The bedroom in well-to-do America has become headquarters. It's technology central. It's practically like a radio station where people are managing different things. You may have two couples on two different devices. Families are texting each other in the household.
We have about 2 minutes left, so I want to ask you, what is it that you would like to come across now at this point, if you want to talk about Winthrop, if you want to talk about more ways that people can at home and seniors help them to sleep, but also the importance of coming to your doctor.
I think in the last 2 minutes, we should say that we're incredibly blessed at NYU Winthrop that we are now in the process of almost completing the merge with New York University, which is hugely committed to wellness. One of the priorities of NYU Winthrop, which is evident, is that we have this flagship sleep center, which is one of the best in the tri-state area. It is now expanding to become even bigger. We have just had a wonderful colleague join us who is also going to be seeing a huge number of sleep patients alongside myself and my existing colleagues. So we're very committed to improving the quality of sleep for people here in Long Island and the tri-state area. We have referrals from many places. And for listeners to understand, a huge component of improving your quality of life, it's not only how long we live, but how well we live, is tied into the quality of your sleep. And that you do not need to struggle with a sleep disorder that means that you can't stay awake when you're watching a movie with your grandchild, that you can't sleep at night, that you have embarrassing movements at night, that you're afraid of falling at night. You don't have to live with that. We can come up with solutions for you.
Well, I'm just going to say, if you're interested in reaching the Winthrop Sleep Disorder Center, that's a 516-631-3907, and we will certainly repeat that number late in the show. Dr. Ahmed, it has been wonderful to have you here. The information is excellent. I know we're going to have you back, and perhaps your colleagues, too. You've been listening to Project Independence in You here at WCWP.org, and we'll be right back.